Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive.
Well, let's start with CU. We'll get to the Broncos in a second. Coach Prime earlier today with rivalries.
You got to give me one at a time. Now, you just got me all hyped up about the Nebraska thing. You just bombarded me about that, right? This tradition, that was tremendous tradition. Now you want me to understand about the Rocky Mountain Showdown. So you got to give me some verbiage or some literature on something, you know, just to brief me. But trust me, this isn't my first rodeo when it comes to that. I think the Falcons and the Saints were quite a showdown, as well as playing against the 49ers, as well as the Cowboys 49ers. I can keep going, Cowboys Philly, you know, Cowboys whoever. Was always a darn showdown, baseball as well. So it's always some type of adversity that you have against someone in close proximity of you. Yeah, I had two divorces, which was a heck of a showdown, too. So don't tell me about a showdown.
I'm laughing because it's funny. That's a riot.
He got a good laugh out of us. Yeah, he did today.
I've had two divorces. Don't tell me about a showdown.
I believe him. I believe that man.
How much money should they throw at Deion Sanders right now?
This idea first came to me when I was standing in the press conference at the TCU game. Rick George came up next to me, and I almost whispered in his ear because I'd never seen a media scrum quite like that. That was, of course, the media press conference where Prime is yelling at Ed Werder. I almost leaned over to Rick George and went, you better get that extension ready. Because if you want, someone will come calling. At the end of the year, he is going to get offered a ridiculous, somebody will, whatever big name school fires their coach this offseason, it's coming. And CU has to know how to deal with it. I will be curious to see how it happens. Now, if I were Coach Prime, I don't know if I would take it this year. Because next year, to me, represents way more value in what you could potentially get, and it's a bigger bargaining chip. Let's just say they win 8 games this year, right? Well, okay, you get a big number. You go out next year and you're a title contender. Now you're talking about pulling things from, you know, TV deals and whatever, and if you want to keep them around and giving them a little bit more than just a contract. So if I were Prime, and plus, Shador is a, you know, if he does stick around next year, which I think he will, we'll see what happens. Mel Kiper says he's a slam dunk QB3 in this draft class as it is. So if he sticks around next year, Kiper also said that he'd be the guaranteed number one overall pick, and we'd be having the same discourse with Shador like we are with Caleb Williams right now, which, based upon what we've seen, it's kind of hard to disagree. But at the very same time, if I'm Prime, that's when Travis leaves, that's when Shiloh leaves, that's when Shador leaves. He might end up taking a little bit more stock into what's going on after next season. I just don't know if he would jump anywhere this offseason.
I think you got to come up with that. Well, I said it earlier. I think you got to come up with a virtual lifetime contract. That's it. There's really not much else to think about here. I don't know, 55, 56, whatever he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's a lifetime contract to somebody who's 55, 56? What are we talking about?
I don't know. I just don't know how much longer he wants to coach. I mean, I know.
But what would a lifetime contract be the equivalent? 10 years? 15 years?
10, yeah.
10 years?
Yeah.
I mean, listen, you could just make it a 10-year contract, but it has a little bit more sizzle if you say this is a lifetime contract.
It probably starts 10 years.
I'd go beyond that, though. I really would try
He's
to...
He's not going
to
coach for more than that, though.
Okay, but I would go... But think about this for a second. Even if he's not... Say he coaches 10 years. Let's say he coaches 10 years.
Okay.
And he doesn't want to coach anymore at 66 years old. How many more years do you want him associated with the program?
Oh, forever. You never want to lose that.
Correct?
Yeah.
So you put together some sort of lifetime contract that has different escalators depending on what he's doing. But if you're CU and you see the impact this is having right now and you dig into who this guy is, man, I was transfixed watching this YouTube documentary on Prime.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool. It's done really well. It was pretty quick. It was about 25 minutes or so. But there were a lot of details either I didn't know or I had forgotten about his path and his journey. And he's hitting a home run for the New York Yankees when he's 21 years of age. He's returning a kickoff for a touchdown for the Falcons at 21 years of age. He signed a deal as a rookie for $4.4 million over 4 years, which, you know, is kind of a drop in the bucket. It's almost comical now. The degree that he came back and played for the Ravens after a multi-year absence and came back and played baseball after a multi-year absence. There was a period where he just sort of stopped playing sports and came back in both sports. This guy, you know, the high school thing in Texas, you know, that
was a major screw up. He's admitted it.
Right. But he goes on from there, hugely successful in endorsements and in broadcasting and now in coaching. And you are seeing the financial positives that are just gargantuan through the roof. He literally, I don't care what you pay him. So if you pay him $20 million a year, and you got to pay his staff too, like you got to have good guys around.
Of course, of course.
So whatever
you
gotta
that. You got to raise the money for the assistant pool. Yeah.
You are, if you are CU because of that decision, to say his entire staff is $30 million a year for the sake of argument.
Okay.
You are going to make, in the span of 10 years, far more than $1 billion in terms of just everything.
Oh,
I mean, it is going to be insane in terms of the revenue that you're going to generate for that university.
Oh, buddy, if he sticks around for 10 years, it's going to be unrecognizable.
So what's 20 million a year then?
Oh, I don't think it's anything. I just don't know if he would do it. That's what I'm saying, is I don't know if he would make that commitment.
Why wouldn't he do it?
For the freedom to choose to do different things and to have different options, because I don't think it is all about the money. If it were all about he's got plenty of money. I mean, yes, obviously a huge contract would be great.
Do you think he has a desire to do something else in college football?
I don't know. I really don't.
That's what you got. Listen, if he wants to do something else in life, or if he does want to coach in the NFL, well, there's not much you can do about that. But do you know what the one thing is? They've got to prevent it to you. Having him want to do something else in college football.
I just don't think it is. His whole goal and what he enjoys the most, it's about coaching his kids. And then it spreads out from there about bringing in other kids. And he used to do this when he played for the Cowboys, too. He'd find some underprivileged kids and, you know, bring them into his house and kind of get them back on track. Like, he did a lot of that stuff. He loves that. I just don't know if his body's going to hold up. Like, it's tough for him to just make it through a game.
Hey, I get it. I just don't want to lose him to any other college program.
I have a hard time seeing that happening.
So make it, in my opinion, figure out, forget about the details, whatever it is, figure out what something you could label as a lifetime college coaching contract.
Yeah.
Perhaps there's an out if he does, and I know you say he doesn't want to, but perhaps there's an out if he wants to go pro. But make it something that you don't lose him to Michigan State like Midnight Mel.
Oh, I would be really surprised. Rick George will be on top of it this time.
Make sure you do something that you don't lose him to Texas A&M. You don't lose him to Florida. You don't lose him to other places that have happened to CU because it's been a stepping stone school for those that do well. Make sure that doesn't happen. And I think you can live with it at the end of the day. And hopefully that gets done. And do we need more than two games to know that's the right thing to do?
No, absolutely not. No.
No.
I mean, you didn't need more than a game.
Who's here this weekend?
60 minutes, College Game Day, Big Noon kickoff, ESPN's First Take, and I think there's another one I just can't off the top of my head. I emailed the SID about it. He made mention, Prime did in his latest video, that there's another ESPN show coming. CU has never, point blank period, I don't care when there were national championships. I'm sorry to offend, you know, some of our older CU fans. They've never had this attention. Not like this. Really. I mean, this is something else.
Keep it going. There is a there was a moment tied in with Aaron Rodgers and some of the craziness about suggestions about Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. But there was something going on that is one of the funnier promotions you've ever seen in your life. And we have the audio of it coming up next. C-Mac, Matt Smith, KJ, the top looking good today. Drew rolling kind of with this Cubs gear.
Yeah, it was a nice win last night.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're a Cubs guy, too.
No, did you forget?
For a second.
You know, Chris Bryant came back. He hasn't played since July 22nd.
I didn't mean to go deep into Rocky stuff.
Did Chris Bryant come back just to play and hang out with his buddies?
I don't know. I know it was a home game for the Cubs. I heard the chants, trust me. I saw the Rockies give up two runs in the top of the ninth and lose the game. I saw it all, not unaware of it. I know how close they are to losing 100 games. I still hate the Cubs and their fans. I hate the fans more than the team themselves.
Mm.
Not you personally or you personally, Drew, but in general.
You can say you hate me. It's fine.
I don't hate
I don't take offense to it.
But I hate, in general, Cubs fans. They are one. Oh, man.
Because they love their team? Is that why you hate them?
Who are they arrogant? They're up there. They are up there.
Arrogant?
Oh, my God. I don't even want to go there. Okay. I've gone on this rant 10 million times before.
All right.
I will say it was I was disappointed to see the Aaron Rodgers injury. I'm not a big Aaron Rodgers fan, but I think Aaron Rodgers in the NFL makes the NFL more interesting. And I think the Aaron Rodgers playing for the Jets was going to be a really fun story to watch, especially for the Broncos fans with the Rodgers Hackett thing, in terms of, well, are we sure the whole problem was Hackett? Like, what would Hackett and Rodgers do together? And then, of course, you had that great story and drama that was going to lead up to Game 5 here in Denver on October 8th. I mean, that just circled that. That was, well, now it's just, that's just all gone. I just had to laugh at this promotion at this bar in Wisconsin, though.
Oh, that was wonderful.
This is one of the funniest things. If you guys didn't catch this, this bar in Wisconsin said, If the Jets lose, your drinks are free. So anytime there wasn't like a Packers-Jets conflict, which I think comes up like 12 times a year, they were going to keep this promotion going. So you just got to figure out, you know, if the Jets will lose. Well, here's this free TV report.
And the mood has changed considerably. That is because the Jets just won the game on a long touchdown in overtime. You can take a look. This is the reaction from a bar where people are realizing the bar tabs they've been racking up all night, thinking, certainly with Rodgers hurt, the bar was going to be paying that tab. It is setting in. They are going to have to go to the bar and pay that tab. That's where we're at. This offer is going to be in effect for another 12 games this season, as long as the Jets and Packers are not playing at the same time.
Oh, my God. That is too funny.
Can you imagine? Because, you know, you left the tab open, and because you didn't have to foot the bill, you had a couple. You had a couple maybe more than you would have in the first place. And there was the conversation. Bill, you can't just leave. You got to pay your tab. Why? Because they won.
Too funny.
That was hilarious.
That is too funny. And they, I guess you're rooting against it. But, all right. Like, there's hate, and then there's sports hate.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I really seriously doubt even Packers fans that might feel scalded by Rodgers like really hate him. I'm gonna guess it's more sports hate than anything.
I'm not a Rodgers guy at all, even less than you are.
Yeah, but are you a hate guy or a sports hate guy with him?
I respect him because he's one of the best quarterbacks that's ever played, and the NFL is better with him. Would I rather watch Zach Wilson on Sundays or Aaron Rodgers? Aaron Rodgers.
That game is so much more interesting. I mean, it was a great game. But it's a great game for weird reasons because of the meltdown of Josh Allen and maybe, holy cow, Bills fans, get ready. It might be over.
Did you?
It might be over there for Bills.
Nobody was more disappointed than Peyton Manning on the Manning cast last night when that happened. He's like, well, I have nothing. All of my stuff was preparing for Aaron Rodgers and what this is going to look like. Now I got nothing to prepare from.
Yeah, that shows a riot because Peyton Manning puts like hundreds of hours of research into it and Eli shows up.
Right.
And that's essentially the show.
I think they're getting better.
They're great.
I think they're actually getting a lot better.
The show is absolutely fantastic. So I'll watch. I kind of watch it in two different ways. I have the game on because my wife can't stand the Manning cast. She just wants the straight play-by-play. So we'll put the game on with that volume on. But I'll have the Manning cast on in like my ear because I just find it so unbelievably entertaining. She can't. She thinks it's too distracting. She's just not into it.
I've heard other people feel that way, but to me, I could listen to Peyton and Eli talk about pretty much anything for hours.
I think it's brilliant.
I wish they had a podcast. I would listen to the crap out of that.
Well, we've seen the numbers for Omaha Productions. Holy cow!
What's the current valuation? $400 million.
Yes, and rising by the day.
Attaboy, Sheriff.
They're into like everything when it comes to media. A lot of things that you wouldn't even know. They're into movie production, TV production, podcasting. They're into stuff that has nothing directly to do with Peyton, but Peyton's obviously, you know, got his fingers on it.
Did you notice that it wasn't Peyton Manning who did the pre-preparation scouting call with Nathaniel Hackett? That was Eli's job.
Oh, is that right? Uh-huh. I did not catch that.
I chuckled at that when I heard it because I was thinking to myself, yeah, Peyton was probably like, you know what? Why don't you take Hackett? That might be a little awkward.
All right, it's a hot take Tuesday. I got to admit, I'm listening to my guy, Zach, who's brilliant. Zach Bye.
ZB?
He's got the numbers from the numbers. And he's like, I'm not into hot take radio. It was a little bit like Cecil, a little bit.
That is Cecil's trademark.
But he's like, it's not hot take, but Jarrett Stidham's about to start every game.
I feel like you're misrepresenting him here.
Something along those lines. He was saying that there's some sort of dividing line where Jarrett Stidham will become the Broncos quarterback because of poor play.
Because of performance-based reasons.
Performance-based reasons.
Wow, okay.
Performance-based reasons. And
boy, that...
I don't want to disappoint Zach, but that's a hot take.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what a hot take is. So I don't stray from it. I don't pretend to be above it like others do. I tend to dive right into it. A hot take Tuesday. What do you got to say? Love to hear from you. 303-713-1043. And I'll start off with this for you to think about. Who's got it worse right now? Ready? Chiefs, the Bills, the Jets, or the Broncos? Who's got it worse off right now? Chiefs, Bills, Jets, or Broncos? Hot Take Tuesday starts next.
You know, I don't run from it. I look forward to it.
The Drive.
Leading off Hot Take Tuesday, presented by Papa Murphy's. Order your pizza for pickup today. Zach Bye's hot take was we're going to have Jarrett Stidham be the quarterback for performance reasons for Russ, although he says it's not a hot take, so sorry. I don't think there's any scenario where that happens, barring injury. How's that for a hot take? There's zero scenario where Jarrett Stidham becomes the Broncos' starting quarterback, barring an injury.
No, I don't see it either. Not performance based, and maybe I'm wrong. I mean, Russ was 27 to 34, only for 177 yards. That's got to get better. Like, you can't complete 27 passes and not accumulate 200 yards. So I get that maybe there were some elements that you could be critical of. But what's the goal of the year? The goal of the year is to figure out if Russ is your dude, and how are you going to do that by starting Stidham?
And if you're not, and if. Because do you really think the future is with Jarrett Stidham? It's illogical thinking. In fact, the fact that, you know, Sean Payton wanted Stidham and he was his guy and they ponied up, you know, more money for Stidham, it's another one of those okay, Sean, sort of moments.
I would agree.
Because
there's
not a lot of logic that goes to it because in zero scenario, I mean, unless you really seriously think Jarrett Stidham is the new Brock Purdy. But I haven't seen evidence of that, and I don't think there's enough out there. What Brock Purdy's doing is absolutely incredible. It is a unicorn sort of thing. So let's say that's not going to happen, as crazy as it is, so logic would dictate that that's not going to happen. Well, if things are going poorly with Russ, then you'd want to bottom out, theoretically, as much as you possibly can to get one of the big three, which right now... According to Mel Kiper, he's like, man, let me get this right. I want to get this right for sure. Hold on one second. The big three right now. Yeah, Mel Kiper. Caleb Williams, Drake May, Shedeur Sanders.
Yep.
According today to Mel Kiper.
Yeah, NFL scouts are just raving about him. Look at Shedeur. There are two programs in all of FBS, which is major college football, that have over 30 pressures allowed on the year, and the two of them have over 40. It's Hawaii and Colorado. Shedeur has put up those numbers while being pressured 40 times. Now, a lot of that, some of those are on him, too, for holding on the ball just a little bit. But at the very same time, I mean, his stock is, it's only going to get higher from here.
I don't see any scenario where Russ is benched for performance. First of all, I think they're going to win games. So, you know, I don't think it's really going to happen like that. That being said, I don't think it's going to happen. No matter what, I don't think we'll ever see Jarrett Stidham barring some injury to Russ. Okay.
Which is possible. I mean, that aspect of it is
always
possible.
That's always possible. Aaron Rodgers made it 4 plays. There were more episodes of Hard Knocks than plays that he played for the New York Jets, 5-4.
But your original point.
Injury is always possible.
Your original point about bottoming out with Russ, you have to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that you're going to have to bail on that contract because it's not going to be pretty on the other side of it. So, yes, if he fails, you got to let him fail. I don't anticipate Sean Payton going that route. But maybe he does. I'm not Sean.
Who's got it worse right now?
He onside kick first play of the game. I wouldn't have done that.
The Bills, Chiefs, Jets, Broncos, and I'll throw the Bengals in there. So we're going with the and the Jets won, okay? The Jets are the only team that won in this crew.
I would have been first in Pick'em alone. All the Bills had to do is win.
Who won Pick'em?
Mark Schler.
Did he really?
He did. He did. He came up runner-up to me. I led wire-to-wire last year.
Good for Mark.
I did, but I'm back one. I told him, like I said, like Liam Neeson in Taken.
Okay.
There is nowhere you can
Who's
run.
Got it worse? Bills, Chiefs, Jets, Browns, Bengals. Rank them. 5-4-3-2-1.
Jets
are at number one.
Jets, easily. Yeah, look at what they did. They put all their eggs into that basket. Finally, after years of trying to draft and develop and striking out, you're bringing in a GOAT. You know, you're bringing in a 4-time NFL MVP and a Super Bowl champion to be your dude who can still play at a really high level. 4 plays into it, you have your heart ripped out of your chest? Are you kidding me? No, they are in the worst spot. They are. Because they may have gotten the win last night, but what's it like when you have to game plan for next week and the week after and the week after that? Like, you could have the, you know, all right, guys, rally the troops, you know, next man up. But that starts to lose a little bit of its cachet. Because, yeah, everybody knows that Rodgers has done so.
Second worst off of that list.
You said Bills, Chiefs, Broncos, and Jets?
Bengals, yeah.
And Bengals.
Yeah.
The Broncos. Probably, if they're not number one, they're number two.
Okay.
Yeah. They are, man.
Number three?
The Bills. Yeah, something's wrong there. Something's in the water.
What is going on there?
I don't know. Josh Allen did not look like the same Josh Allen that was in the MVP talks the last several seasons.
Bengals and Chiefs after that?
Yeah, Chiefs will be fine. Yeah, so, the Bengals will be fine too.
Yeah, I agree. So the Jets are worse off right now than the Broncos. You sure about that?
No. No, I'm not.
See that catch by Garrett Wilson?
Oh, that was sick. Oh, my God.
Is he a dynamic playmaker?
Hell yes. Oh, my. And Breece Hall. I mean, how about coming off the ACL? Wow.
Yeah?
Wow.
See Quinton Williams?
I did. Yeah, like I said, the Broncos are probably worse off. But in the immediate, it feels like the Jets are because they just had their hearts ripped out of their chest. But also, that's what the Jets have been for their existence primarily.
The Jets put up 13 points in the second half.
Yeah.
The Jets did that with Zach Wilson, put up 13 points in the second half, had a defensive stop in overtime when they needed it, and then got a dynamic play from a guy who barely made the team. The Jets had 2 undrafted free agents make the team at the wide receiver position. 2. That is insane.
Oh, and you know why the Jets are in a better spot? Because if they had to move on from Rodgers, it wouldn't be a big deal. Like it would hurt him for maybe a season.
But. All right, so why are the Jets? Why are we even having this conversation then? Why are the Jets in the why? Shouldn't it be obvious? Should it be unbelievably obvious? They just lost Aaron Rodgers. I mean, this should be clearly the Jets are worse off than the Broncos, right?
Well, if you were just evaluating it based on quarterback and maybe at first initial reaction, that's kind of where I was thinking. But really, if you look at it, the Jets are a far more talented team.
I could just, you lift up Breece Hall, Quinton Williams, Garrett Wilson.
There's tons more. DJ Reed, Sauce Gardner.
Exactly.
I mean, go down the list. Yeah.
Well, Sauce Gardner, Patrick Surtain, that kind of equals itself out, I suppose.
Either way, there's a lot of talent on that team that Denver just doesn't have.
Correct. Never mind getting an incredible contribution from a guy who barely made the team to win the game. You know, man, I'm going to keep going back to this documentary, man. I can't shake it with Deion. I'm just watching Deion, who is so unbelievably talented, making plays on special teams. making plays when he came back with the Cowboys when he wasn't playing baseball on offense. Like, you know, when did we just hermetically seal football players and we just said, you know, hey, we can't take any chances, we can't take any risks? What happened to the days of just getting your most dynamic athletes, period, and then letting them make plays?
Is this leading us back down the Patrick Surtain's punt returner conversation?
Brother, you
know. That's where I feel like you're headed.
Hey, guys, 303-713-1043. I'm happy for contributions here.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me who the most dynamic athletes on the Broncos are right now. Let me know.
So what's your suggestion here? I just want to make sure we're clear.
You know what my suggestion is? Be creative, be aggressive.
So you're saying, just so we're clear, to use Patrick Surtain on offense. Because that's what you're saying, right?
Wouldn't kill me.
Okay.
I mean, do whatever you want to do. But
hey, look, if they lose another receiver, they may end up having to. So I don't know what to tell you.
I want to go back to angry Joe Flacco when we come back from the break. Because what angry Joe Flacco said should be the tone for this Broncos team right now. And again, I'm praising Deion Sanders, what he came in with we believe in what we're doing, and the expectations are high. The prophetic words of angry Joe Flacco, you'll hear them next, and that sets the tone for what should be to come.
It's The Drive on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present Angry Joe Flacco.
Well, I mean, come on. I just look at it like we're now a 2-6 football team, and we're like afraid to go for it in a 2-minute drill. You know, like who cares if you give the ball back to the guys with a minute 40 seconds left? They obviously got the field goal anyway. And once again, we're a 2-6 football team, and it just feels like we're kind of afraid to lose a game. It's 3rd and 5 at the end of the game. Who cares if they have a timeout there at the end or not? You know, getting in field goal range isn't that tough. What do we have to lose? Like, why can't we be aggressive in some of these situations? That's kind of how I feel about a lot of the game today.
And that was it. He's the angry young man. He's the angry Joe Flacco. And that was just it, man. It's, and the questions he's asking right now was, what are we doing here? You know what? We're walking around here like, you know, we got a better record than we really do. I mean, we are lousy.
Well, I mean, come on. I just look at it like we're now a 2-6 football team, and we're like afraid to go for it.
So you are right now for the Denver Broncos. You're a team that is willing to do an onside kick at the beginning of the game, but you're not willing to go for it on fourth down. I was like what Stoke had to say. It's like, well, it's 4th and 3. I mean, you kicked a field goal. I mean, what are we doing here? You got a team that is pretty darn clear right now that you can't trust the defense to stop teams. Even when the Broncos defense was kind of like really, really good, they had a problem at stopping teams on like final drives of the game. They have for years. So even though things may go one way, Sean Payton, my man, you got to learn from the past on this a little bit because the culture here has been just of buckling that, not buckling down.
Yeah, but he doesn't know any of that. It's just like you said. He couldn't tell it was muddy because he couldn't tell it was raining.
Do the research. You just saw it. It just happened to you.
Well, now hopefully those things will start to click in, and hopefully he realizes that they just don't have that much margin for error. And D-Mac, Joe Flacco said that when they were 2-6. This is week 2, right? Sean Payton is just trying to settle his roots down here and continue to install the offense. I don't even know if it's completely all installed yet. I know he's got part of it. He's got part of it in. Like that short game, man, they got that down. And I thought they executed that really well to the point where you're talking about multiple 10-play-plus drives. Shoot, we would have taken that last year. You're talking about a little bit of offensive cohesion and play sequencing, right? Hopefully it gets better. I think it'll get better. How much better, though? I don't know. And I think that's where Broncos fans, the frustration's coming from right now. Because if you look in your crystal ball, does it look like this team is headed for purgatory? Or does it look like this team is headed for contention? And purgatory, shoot, that'd be better than where they were last year. But at the same time, what does that get you? Where does that go? Like, are you going to sell me, hypothetically, Broncos win 7-8 games? What do you sell me at the end of the year? Look, it's working. Building blocks. But then they trot out the same thing next year, more or less. I'm sure there'll be some roster adjustments. How do you expect fans to react if you continue going down this road? Now, the difference, I think, between what we're going to see from Sean Payton versus Nathaniel Hackett, Vic Fangio, Vance Joseph, I think you're going to see this team get better as the season goes on. I just think it's going to be incremental, and I don't know if it's going to be fast enough to actually do anything about it this year. So at the end of the season, you have to hope that you have a cleaner operation, much cleaner than where you're at right now. Even though it's a significant improvement over where it was last year, we're not talking about a team that's close. We're not talking about a team that's close to making the playoffs right now. You know, that's not where the caliber of this group.
They were 4-9 in one-score games last year. They just lost a one-score game. They lost a close game. I think it's fair to say out of 17 games, there's going to be 13 of them that are probably going to be one-score games this year. Hopefully there's two or three or four that all go their way by more than, one score. They had one win last year. One win by more than one score. One. They won by 9 points. Okay.
Against Trace McSorley. Just a little context
there. That's right.
Yeah.
So if you say, okay, well, in general, that's the way of the NFL and the Broncos. And they're 0-1 right now, and they have 12 more one-score games to go. Well, how do you win those one-score games? And I would put forward that I think you do have the team to actually do it. I mean, you were there. You were close in these games. So when I hear some doom and gloomers like the Zoakley show, those are the doom and gloomers. And then we've got rainbows and sunshine with at least stink. Although I think Mike's about to jump off a roof, but we want to go puppies and rainbows with the morning show. The truth is the truth exists significantly in the middle, and I love Zach's numbers and the 0-2 thing, and you know, you might as well throw yourself in the front of a bus if you're 0-2. I get it. I get it, but then I would put forward the NFL is ever-changing. You just don't know what's going to happen. So don't let the stats of the past dictate the, future outcome. It doesn't necessarily correlate, especially with the 17-game schedule. I think it's slightly different. So with all due respect to all parties involved, puppies and rainbows and doom and gloomers, the truth is, how are you going to win close games? And can the Broncos, with Russell Wilson and Sean Payton and everybody else, Matt, figure out how to win close games?
I think so. All offseason, I was preaching that the baseline level of expectation for improvement should be significantly higher than what Broncos team stepped onto the field for week one last year. And it should happen right out of the chute. I mean, last year, you're third in the league in penalties, tied fourth in the league in pre-snap penalties. You had so many dumb procedural errors and errors of decision-making. I think that's why, more than anything, and maybe it triggered that for me, which is really why I didn't like the onside kick, because it's like, that's a decision you made directly. That's a self-inflicted mistake right there. That's just one of many. And this team has to cut out on those, not riverboat gamble and play around with it. Actually, hey, did you want to hear those numbers on the onside kick?
Sure. What do you got?
So, I saw this piece, and I got a credit. I think it's the Mile High Report. So it's locally. It's from a few years ago. The surprise onside kick. This is a kick that occurs in the first, second, or third quarter. Because you remember, Sean Payton yesterday gave his reasons, or 2 days ago, rather, after the game, gave his reasons for why they kicked it. He said that there was something on film that they saw, and they wanted to take advantage of it, and he liked the numbers. Yesterday, I was really harsh with him, saying, I'd love to see those numbers, because as far as I know, two onside kicks last year were converted out of 52. So as far as like it actually carrying a high percentage, I don't know about that, Sean. Well, and this is, like I said, the Mile High Report. Shout out to Joe Mahoney. This century, and this was written March 14, 2020. This century, there have been 192 surprise onside kicks. Those have been successful 87 times at a 45.3% rate.
No kidding.
So from an odds perspective, there is a 45% chance that your team gets the ball back at somewhere around your own 45-yard line.
Hey now, there you go. Those are some good numbers.
Conversely, there's a 55% chance that you give the other team great field position at your 45.
Well, that's a good CU math right there.
So
45.
CU math? What?
Well, you know, 45 minus 100, 55.
Okay.
I got it.
Let's see. You're just taking shots?
It's a compliment.
Okay. Anyway, the point is yeah, you actually have a better success rate when it's, quote-unquote, a surprise onside kick, which is classified as an onside kick taken in the first, second, or third quarter.
Okay. So, essentially, when I said, when you brought up the 2% thing yesterday, I said, well, listen, context matters, you know, blah, blah, blah. I didn't know the numbers were that high.
Me neither. I would have never guessed that
still
it was that high.
Still under 50%, but still... It's basically a coin flip, is what you're saying. It's a coin flip.
Ask me if I still like it.
Well, obviously you don't. But do you still like it?
No, I don't, because I don't think 50% is the tone you want to set. Now, I get it. Like, it almost worked, and it would have been great if it almost worked. But as we've mentioned several different times throughout the show today, there was just a better time and a better place to use it. I just, where's the risk reward there?
But you understand from a statistical
I do, which is why I brought it up.
I'm glad you did. That actually helps my argument.
100%. And it discredits mine. So I'm not just going to be like, no, I said it, so ignore those numbers. No. I wanted to know what the actual numbers
were.
That
being said, when I heard Sting and I heard Troy say, well, you could have done it on the second kick, and you could have a surprise onside kick any point, first, second, third quarter, to gain an extra possession. You don't actually have to do it on the very first possession, but if you want to talk about surprise.
But look, I mean, it's not like
you don't get much of a surprise more than the very first play of the entire season.
Yeah, and no, you don't. That's about as big of a surprise as you could possibly get. I just kind of go back to your percentages there. I still think that's way too low of a percentage. That being said, I get it. I was confused when I heard Sean Payton say that, because he may be arrogant, but he's no fool. He's a damn good football coach, and there's a reason why he's got a Lombardi trophy, right? And why, you know, I'm living out of my car, that type of situation. But I'm sitting there listening to Sean, and he's talking about, I love the numbers there. Well, it's a really low percentage play. And while that may have been the case, you know, as far as surprise onside kicks go, last year, 2 of 52 were recovered. So, yes, you have a 45% chance of getting it. I heard it's still a gamble, man. Mike it's a huge gamble.
Stink hated it. Mike liked it. Stokely liked it.
Zach hated
didn't
it.
Didn't like it. You hate it. I like it.
We're all split down the middle. And the text line was almost 50-50 yesterday. Well, like I told you, I went back and looked.
Yeah, but
almost 50-50.
Okay. That wasn't the problem with the game. That's not why they lost, though. It was an exciting thing that happened early. The problem they have is the defense can't consistently stop the opponent. Not only then, but like at a lot of times during the game, including most importantly, the end of the game. So we're here to sort of chop it up. See you. How much money do you throw at Deion? What are you doing now that the Commanders are coming to town? I put an eyeball to the Commanders today. Oh boy.
Oh yeah, that was a rough game. And
yeah, but well, we'll get to all of it.
Yeah.
But just as a quick note. For us hockey fans, Matt, there was a fun addition to the Avalanche today, and you gotta love how some of this news breaks. Tomáš Tatar. Oh boy, really?
Tomáš Tatar.
You're killing me.
I knew you'd say it wrong. I couldn't wait all day. I was like, he's gonna say it wrong the first time.
You know,
I cannot wait to correct it.
I'm gonna get it right. Tomáš.
Some drunk guy on the Canadiens broadcast.
I just thought we should have that in case we have issues of pronunciation. So you're preparing for me.
Yeah.
I'm preparing for you.
That's chemistry right there, my friend. We get the picture.
That would be a drunk Devils fan in a concourse before a jersey. All right, we heard you. This guy, I love, it's a one-year deal. It's not that much money. It's 1.4 million, something like that, something along those lines. Not that much. It's like a little, it's kind of like Evan Rodriguez sort of money.
Million and a half, 1.5 over 1 year, yeah.
20 goal scorer, has been.
He was last year.
Played a lot for the Devils. So
all 82.
Legit, not a PTO sort of guy, not a tryout. I love this addition. And another size guy, a bigger dude. He was skating. Listen, I'll give you a sports heads up right now. The Avalanche are basically working out in the mornings at Family Fun Center over there at Peoria and Arapaho. I mean, the whole team is almost, well, there's one guy that's not there, of course.
Gabe?
But, yeah. The team is out there, and Tomas was there working out with them before it was announced
right.
that he joined the team.
Yeah, and the few guys who were at the rink covering practice were like, wait, who is that thing Tatar on the back of it?
Tomas!
So I guess you play for the Avs now.
I guess he does. So welcome, Tomas.
Yeah.
Tatar to the Avalanche.
I like this move. 1 year, million and a half. This is the last of the Avs cap space. They are officially done. Okay. They accomplished their biggest goals this offseason, which was rebuilding their forward depth. Check. Absolutely, they did that. They didn't add that second top six guy that I thought they needed. However, Tatar is versatile.
Do you like the addition?
I do. I think it...
Stop. We'll dig more into the Avalanche as we go. Yeah.